to stereotype the hunting crowd, we probably just don't think of these things. We're probably like just going to tough it out, deal with it. But I just see it more and more as injury not only hurts physically, but it just keeps us from what we want to do. And so as I get older, I'm more and more interested in making sure that I stay healthy and that I don't get injured so that I can hunt more, so that I can hike more, so that I can be outside more. Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Well, welcome to episode 161. Several weeks ago, we posted something on Instagram from a customer of ours, Mike. And Mike is 67, and he kind of shared his story with us directly about using his pack this past fall. And at 67 years old, or should I say years young, he hunted 37 days covering more than 250 miles and was part of packing out 2 elk and 3 bucks over the course of that time. Impressive. Impressive at any age, much less at 67. And I don't know Mike's full story yet, although I have since talked to him on the phone and we're actually going to get him on the podcast. But I bring that up because today's topic isn't something we probably want to hear about or probably would think about in terms of hunting. And it's recovery and it's longevity and it's prehab, so that we can take care of our bodies and so that we can hunt for years and years to come. So there's plenty of talk about training. That's something we've talked about on the podcast. There's a lot of things on social media and that about, you know, training hard and really pushing your body to the limits, and all that's great. But what about the piece where we actually take care of our body, where we can train hard, but we also train smart, where we recover well, where we take care of our bodies as we're training, as we're hunting? And that's what we get into in this episode. So again, this is a topic I'm personally guilty of knowing I should learn more about, and then not just learn, but actually take action on, but I typically don't. And so this was a good reminder for me. Hopefully it will be helpful for you. If you're working through a specific injury, even if you're young and healthy, pay attention to this one. I'm sure there's a lot that you will pick up on. And so let's get into this. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you have any questions, comments, feedback, or the like, send us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Let's dive into this conversation with our guest, a certified athletic trainer, Jared Bransky.
Yeah, so I'm a certified athletic trainer. Been working in the field for about 5 years now. I was fortunate enough to, right out of college, go right into baseball. So I worked for the Detroit Tigers Minor League Association. So it's the whole organization you work for, but you ideally work with the minor league systems. I actually worked with the New York Mets before them for a year as their certified intern, which is a full, it's a full-time gig, but it's no benefits, so they call it an internship. And then most recently, I worked with USA Boxing out in Colorado. It's the reason why I moved out here, and worked at the United States Olympic Committee as an athletic trainer for them as their medical manager.
It's amazing to have that level of experience, I'm sure. And then is it much different working with like baseball versus boxing? Obviously, it's a totally different pursuit, different type of athlete, I'm sure a different type of injury, but at the same time, I'm sure there's some sort of crossover. Is that a big learning curve?
Yeah, actually, because I was not, you know, I wasn't familiar with, you know, boxing or competitive sports, you know, UFC fighters, X, Y, and Z. So it was a different change. The learning curve is always there, no matter what, whatever domain you change. contact sports, you know, when I get out in off season, I go work high schools, next thing, you know, football, hockey, whatever you could. So there is correlation between the injuries and things like that. But definitely a lot more specifics when you go into a certain sport. Obviously baseball's shoulder, elbow, boxing is more cuts, hands, hand fractures, things like that. So there's a little bit of change, but it's all overlapping. Athletic trainers, when they have the experience, they usually deal with a little bit of everything. So you see a lot. So like I haven't seen an ACL surgery in probably, I don't know, a year or two, but right out of the get-go when I was out of college, I had, I think, like 6 ACL repairs. So once you do a few of them and kind of get your bearings down, you're pretty well set up. And it's kind of like working, you work in a team environment. So you work with under a physician, an orthopedic usually, or a general med physician. And you always have guidance there and ask people for questions if you get stumped or if you hit a wall or you just don't know, because that happens a lot. I always say that there always should be someone out there that knows more than I do from one experience. And then two, the younger generations probably are more fit because the new research comes out. So they're going to teach me just as much. So it's definitely a team environment. So like you guys are talking to nutritionists and sports psychologists and things like that. We work with all those domains. We have a basic for education in most of them, but we only scratch the surface to where we provide, you know, the basics to that. And then we refer to, you know, physicians or whoever's an expert in it or has more experience. We divvy it up that way. So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. When you're working with athletes, is it mostly after an injury? Like, is it mostly rehab, or is it a lot of, you know, kind of preventative maintenance and just keeping them in shape as well?
Yeah, so ideally for an athletic trainer, it should be a lot of preventative medicine and maintenance. Ideally, yeah, you do work with the post-op rehabs and get those. And you work a lot with those too, but you try not to have those. As a good athletic trainer, you want to keep people off your table. So I always say athletic trainers and strength conditioning guys work really well together. They should be a team environment. They overlap so much because we take them from one being injured in post-op along with PTs and the orthos, and then take them right back to the weight room. So there's overlap there. And then also on the other end of the spectrum is we also see deficiencies, mobility imbalances, body imbalances, kind of nerd out there. So we try to correct those so they don't put them in a bad situation for injuries, less likely to have situations. So maintenance is a big part of it. I'd say probably majority of everything is probably maintenance, and we call, you know, corrective exercises, mobility work, things like that, that we work with strength coaches a lot in that area.
Yeah, that's good, because that's part of what I want to get into in a bit, is not only talking about, you know, maybe helping some folks who are facing like an injury or just kind of a nagging issue, but then also making sure that we as hunters, as we're training and then as we're going into hunting season, making sure that we're actually ready to do that and stay healthy and prevent injuries. So we'll definitely get there. I'm curious, what comes to mind for you with the idea of training smart versus training hard? Like, how can we do both well and not just, you know, like tough it up, train hard, kill ourselves, but actually train smart? What are just some of the things that come to mind with that concept?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a good point. It's a fine line, you know, where you train too hard, you try to push through things. I guess we always tell athletes there's a difference between pain and discomfort. Obviously working out is a discomfort. No one likes to stretch or, you know, do soft tissue, things like that, because it's not comfortable, you know? So there is a fine line where you have to build a tolerance to it. And then working hard is, as long as your body, listen to your body is what we always say. If, you know, something doesn't feel right to you, then most likely it's probably not. Especially when it comes to recovery and things like that. If you seem like you're not recovering fast enough to where you're able to do your, you know, general task in your daily job, then most likely you either one, train too hard and you kind of got, you know, from that learning point to back up a little bit, or, you know, there's the other times where you're like, well, I'm okay today, I probably could have went a little harder. So you got to learn from those experiences when you're doing those things. It is a fine line, but listening to your body is always the best, is what we always tell everyone. The big concept is your body is a bank, right? So every time you go out, you train, you lift, you run, X, Y, and Z, you're taking money out of that bank. So we had to put money back in the bank at the end of the day, which comes with rest, nutrition, stretching, mobility, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely get to some of those recovery topics for sure. I know the answer. I think I know part of what you're going to say, but at the same time, it's also one of these questions where I'm guilty of not probably following the advice you're going to give. How important is warm-ups before training or before physical activity?
Oh yeah. I'm guilty as this myself. Even being an athletic trainer, you know, you try to say, you know, do as I say, don't do as I do kind of thing. Absolutely. Yeah. Warm-up is pretty important. But everyone thinks a warm-up just from, you know, being their general, you know, if they were athletes in high school or middle school, everyone thinks the warm-ups are just, you know, a boring, monotonous thing. But you can actually make them pretty fun and pretty light. Oh, technically, a warm-up is just something to make you sweat. One, to get your heart rate up, and two, to actually get moving and get some of the tissues soften and loosen up, more up, you know, stretch technique, you kind of guess it would be more pliable is what it is. So you can do things that are pretty simple. It's very important to warm up, because if you just go, you know, not warming up into things, that's where you put yourself at a big risk injury and things like that. But things as simple as like foam rolling, right? So that's a simple thing you ever can do, and that's considered a warm up. You know, if you're doing it right, you should break a little sweat in that. And then just going into like simple things like doing 10 squats, 10 push-ups, running on a treadmill until you break a sweat at a low pace, like for 3 minutes. I've done all those things where I try to burn through my warm-up as fast as I can to get in and out, just to lack of time, you know, usually I have. I try to make them quick. So it is important, just because you get those properties. One is big, is heart rate up. You get your heart rate up and ready to go for what you're going for. And then two, like you said, the tissues become more pliable and work better for you, less tightness, things like that.
So for in the field stuff, it's probably not as much getting the heart rate up, but somewhat getting mobile. Like, take the scenario of we're 3 or 4 days into a backcountry hunt. We crawl out of the tent, we're loading up, maybe we're throwing, you know, our backpack with 30 pounds on. And sometimes we go from 0 to 60, meaning we go from crawling out of the tent, throwing on our pack, to now we're suddenly up a steep climb or over some deadfall, crazy stuff like that. What are some quick things we should be doing, maybe as we crawl out of the tent, maybe as we're warming up the coffee, if we're taking that kind of time to actually get ready to then go hike for a full day?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. You can do, I mean, there's a bunch of things you can do as simple as, like, you know, if you just wanted to crank out a quick 5 sets of everything, you know, wherever you feel tight, like most time it's people's hip flexors and squatting down and usually lower legs, you know, calves, things like that. So maybe like while you're doing your coffee, just get a quick calf stretching, you know, 5 seconds on, 5 seconds off. Muscle activation is a big thing. That's pretty much just doing really body weight exercises that are real simple and easy. You know, whether it just be like, so for instance, a bicep curl, right? Just squeezing your hand and flexing that bicep. So it's the same thing for your calf, maybe just doing a couple calf raises, things like that. It can be real simple and helpful. Just basically in general, you walking around in the morning and getting ready, ideally is kind of a warm up in itself, from being at rest and then going to it. But if you are feeling a little, you know, a little more, I guess, sore or tight in certain areas, then kind of hit those areas where you feel. Like you said, you got to listen to what your body is saying, because everyone's different. It's not like a one shot hit all. And ideally, I always try to, it was fun because I started doing some, as soon as I woke up in the morning, my first day hunting, I just sat down into a squat position and sat there for like 2 minutes while, you know, my jet boil was heating up, because, you know, that's how long it takes. But you get that spare time where you can just kind of mix in things. So whether it's like, oh, I got to pack my bag for the day, squat down in the squat position and load it up, you know, go like that and come out of it, do things like that.
That's cool. I think it's one of those things that probably just gets overlooked. Maybe we're not thinking of it. Maybe it's not till we put the pack on and start down the trail hiking that we realize we are sore, versus if we actually just out of the tent, as you said, or warming up breakfast or coffee, just simple movements, I think, could make a big difference and allow you to maybe reduce risk of injury, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of the time, by the time you're in the field anyways, you should have done the work prior to that hunt. I know most don't, and some people don't have to, you know, some people can just load it up and go that way. I mean, that's why you see youth athletics. I mean, they can you can put the works at them, and the next day they come in, they're like, I'm not even sore. And I'm like, man, I wish, but wait till that age comes, you know, and then it's gonna be a different animal. So some people are born with that talent and some aren't. And that's just kind of how it goes. Like I said, little things that you can do is just anything in general, just to move, get moving. That's the biggest thing. So,
So let's talk about preseason. Let's talk about what we talked about before with making sure that we stay healthy. You know, when it comes to hunting and training, there's a lot of discussion, right? So there's a lot of focus on hiking with some weights. You can get really specific and do a training program. We actually have one that we give away for free, all kinds of good stuff there. But I think some of the unique demands that hunting provides still gets overlooked with just really simple things like joint strength, joint mobility, and then just really understanding, especially moving with a loaded pack, that's not just legs and lungs. It's actually a ton of like core and trunk work, for example. So maybe just give us some ideas on really simple things, not necessarily workouts, but just things to keep in mind for mobility, you know, core strength, joint strength, that type of thing that we should, you know, consider incorporating, whether that's active rest, whether it's, you know, that stretching, foam rolling, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So ideally when it's the preseason, especially when you're talking like loaded pack and walking around loaded. So a big thing is proprioception and balance. Proprioception is a fancy term that says to yourself, that's your body in space and you know where it is. So simple things like single leg balance into an exercise, maybe a half kneeling or a lay, split squat stance, something that activates your core along with, training that exercise. So I'm sure everyone's seen like a Bozu ball, you know, it's the blue ball that's got a, you know, inflated on one side and then it's flat on the other side. A lot of people like to incorporate those into their exercise programs, which is great. Because obviously when you have a 100-pound pack on and you're walking through the woods, it's not like you're stable. So that's where that core and proprioception comes in. So ideally using a lot of, you know, unbalanced techniques of single leg, shoulder press, you know, just lifting the other leg up while you're shoulder press, you know, on the opposite side is a training tool that incorporates not only your core, but you know, your lower body as well, to help your proprioception increase, which is going to translate into you hiking around, maybe hauling out that, you know, harvest, whatever it may be, because you might step over, you know, a tree or, you know, some blowdown, things like that. So that's kind of a thing you can do, like hurdles, for instance, like just regular track hurdles, right? A great thing to do is load up, you know, whatever it may be, your pack or your weight vest or a kettlebell, and try to laterally or walk through it sideways at different levels of the hurdles, underneath, up and over, underneath, things like that are going to prepare your body for what you are most likely going to see in the field. That's kind of like what you can do for specific kind of training stuff. Definitely try and challenge yourself to incorporate as much core into your exercises at the same time doing that exercise. So like I said, you can do physio ball, which is an exercise ball, push-ups, things that are going to make you unbalanced and don't feel like you're steady. If you take advantage of those and in the preseason, then most likely, or most definitely, it's going to translate to this actual hunting season. And then mobility wise and exercise wise, I always tell people, without, you know, during their warm up and X, Y, and Z, there's little exercises you can do just to find where you're tight, or you feel like you're immobile or you're not as flexible. Those are the areas that you need to spend a little more time into. So not everyone, you know, has tight hamstrings, so they're pretty flexible there. So I wouldn't spend much time there, but you can kind of free roam your body and see where it is in different positions, you know, whether that be like going down into a half kneeling lunge. Some people, as soon as they go down there, I know I'm one of them. As soon as I go into a half kneeling lunge, with good form, I can feel my hip flexor already stretching. So I would ideally go do a, you know, a simple couch stretch, and most of the stuff you can find on YouTube or talk to someone, that are pretty simple. And then you can get into some really in-depth stuff once you, you know, open the floodgates to it. So those are kind of the big things. So, I know I covered a little bit there, so
no, just that's let good me stuff. Know if
anything or not.
You know, I just think the whole topic is interesting as most of us as guys are probably, especially to stereotype the hunting crowd, we probably just don't think of these things. We're probably like, just going to tough it out, deal with it, you know, but I just see it more and more as, you know, an injury not only hurts physically, but it just keeps us from what we want to do. And so as I get older, I'm more and more interested in making sure that I stay healthy and that I don't get injured so that I can hunt more, so that I can hike more, so that I can be outside more. And this whole idea of just, oh, I'll just power through whatever is less and less part of my ego, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, lighten the loads, do more reps. There's different ways to achieve the same goal always. That's why it's great. You know, you can have one person do one thing and another person do another thing. But yeah, lighten loads, more reps, switching the position you're in. So everyone thinks that, like, when you're doing exercises, you need to be on a bench for certain exercises. Technically, when are you ever laying down doing an exercise in the field, you know, or like lifting something? You're always moving. So you want to be athletic. So that's why I always tell athletes, I'm like, you can bench press and squat as much as you want, but if you're not an athlete, it won't translate. You can be as strong as you want. You can be strong, built like an ox, you know, carry that 150-pound pack up a hill and X, Y, and Z, but you got to be athletic because it's multiple joint exercises that you're going to be dealing with. So that's why I say train multiple joints at the same time. You know, like I said, if you're doing a, say you're doing a dumbbell row, for instance, a lot of guys like to, you know, put one arm and one knee on a bench and then do a row. Well, why wouldn't we just do a split squat stance, bend over at the hip, activate your core and your glutes at the same time, and then do the row, you know, 2-for-1 deal, maybe a 3-for-1 deal there.
Mm, yeah, good point. So this isn't meant to make you diagnose anybody or anything like that, but I kind of want to hit some particular issues that I see, that I hear about from, you know, listeners and from customers and things like that, and just kind of see what some general advice might be, just in kind of some different areas and body parts. So hear from a lot of folks, see it all the time, people have low back issues. What are some things, and obviously there's all kind of, I'm not saying there's a slip disc or whatever, you know, we can get into all kinds of caveats, but just in general, what are some things to start with to look at for like stretches or simple strengthening exercises for people who have low back pain?
Yeah, so low back pain is obviously the number one thing, whether that be in general population or athletics, you know, that's the biggest thing you deal with. And I think that's just a carry all for all sports in general. I think that was one of, if it wasn't specifically the sport itself's injury, it was low back pain was probably third on the list on everyone's. So ideally the thing to address there is core and more core. Trunk stabilization exercises are the biggest thing to help with low back pain. Being a guy that actually had a back injury, and being out for like 6 months, just not being able to be functional. You know, I went that route and I found out that my core stabilization is where it made me. And core is more than just abs, you know, it's, you know, your posterior chain, your glutes, your low back area, things like that. So everyone thinks you got to do flexion exercises, you know, crunches, you know, whatever, sit-ups, things like that. But anti-rotation things like planks, side planks, pull-off presses where, you know, you're on a cable machine and you have it at, you know, waist high and you pull that cable out and press it out in front of you and you hold it. So resisting rotation is a great way to do it too. I think those are the big things with low back pain. And obviously some people will tell you, like I said, there's going to be people that are probably going to hear this and be like, well, this guy's totally wrong. But like you said, there's multiple ways to skin a cat. And I will tell you this right now, I do not know all. So, but the best part is, some people will tell you stretching might be a bad thing for your lower back. It might just be your hips are out of line and your leg length might be longer than the other, which is all can be corrected. Very simply, you know, if your one leg is longer than the other, you can put a little, kind of a little elevation in a heel lift or things like that in your boot or in your shoe, find an orthotics that fit. All those are going to be a big part because we run in our whole body is what they call the kinetic chain. So it runs from the feet all the way up to your head. And ideally all that's connected in one way or another. So if you have an ankle problem, most likely it's going to throw off your knee and then it's going to throw off your hip and then it'll throw off your back. So low back issues are a big part. I would say a lot of people, if they have access to chiropractors or people that can manipulate, use them every now and then and gain some knowledge from them because they can give you some take home stuff for, you know, how to readjust yourself without a chiropractor or something simple, you know, muscle energy techniques are what they're called. And they're like static exercises that help offset imbalanced hip bones. Your pelvis is usually the main reason for low back pain. So most of the time you're just out of whack, or you're training one thing way too much and it's not compensating. And the other part of it's compensating, is what it is. So a lot of people that do crunches and, you know, flexion exercises, ideally they might just be, they're doing too much of that and not enough posterior, where they're not doing enough back extensions. Their glutes might not be tight enough, because they all function in one area and they all function together in unison. So that's a hard thing to hit, just because there's so many body parts connected to the pelvis and the lower limbs that tie low back pain, especially with your spine too. But in general, those are the things that I would address to people. Stretching can be a thing to help you out. If it works for you, good, go with it. You know, find what works for you. That's like the hardest thing. Find what works for you. And once you find it, stay with it. And that's all I do.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, I know it's an impossible question to answer, like fix somebody over a podcast, but what you did there in terms of giving some ideas, what to look for, what to consider, is exactly what, you know, we can take and then now go find out what works for us. So that's good stuff. I'm curious with what about shoulders? So whether it's, you know, guys who shoot a bow a lot and just have some sort of discomfort there, what are some of the things we can look at with, you know, again, just like strengthening at that fine level shoulder joints, or making sure we kind of stretch, maintain a healthy rotator cuff, that type of stuff? What should we begin to look at?
One would be mobility and see the differences in how your arm moves. A great way is just go against a wall, put your back flat against it, and see if you can raise your hand thumbs up from the hip all the way up without compensating your shoulder to shrug or anything like that. Seeing if you can cross your arm across the chest, things like that. Mobility is the biggest thing to address first. Because obviously most of the time what happens if you're not mobile, then most likely you have I wouldn't say it's non-efficient mobility is what it is. So your shoulders just aren't moving the right way. So they compensate, and that's what you get a shoulder injury for. And when you have that compensation, other things are going to tie in, and that's where you put yourself at injury. So finding the areas where you lack motion probably would be the biggest thing to hit first, where you can, you know, everyone thinks foam rolling, you can't really apply it to the upper body that well, but there actually you can. You just don't use a foam roller. You use a lacrosse ball or a tennis ball. And I would put that thing right in the back of my rotator cuff or the back posterior musculature of the back. And I would just start moving my arm in ways on that lacrosse ball and rolling around on it where I find spots. I'm like, ooh, that's a little tender right there. So I got to spend a little time right there. That's kind of like the simple way to open up shoulders. Strengthening wise, obviously, is a big part. You don't need a ton of weight to do the external rotators, the shoulder rotator cuff. You don't need a lot of weight. Ideally, guys go in there and they might do a lateral raise with like 30 pounds. Well, now you're not hitting your rotator cuff, you're hitting your deltoids. So actually, if you drop your weight to, this is funny and people are going to laugh, but when we used to work with pitchers, we always told them, hey, you only need 3 to 5 pounds to do a rotator cuff exercise. Other than that, you're probably going to overcompensate with your upper trap or X, Y, and Z. And we always used to have these young kids come in from college or high school, like, no, man, I can do more of this and that. And I'm like, trust me, just do what we're telling you with the 3 to 5 pounds. And I've had guys pick up the 3-pounders and they laugh and they start doing the exercises that I want them to do, and they can't do them. They just burn out. They just stop instantly. So eccentric training is a big part too. So not only the up portion of the exercise, so say you're doing a shoulder lift and you want to take dumbbells, just bringing them straight in front of you. So you bring them up 2 to 3 seconds and then you lower them at a slower rate. Because most of the time rotator cuff tears happen with eccentric forces, which means that's the muscles getting longer. And that's where the most force can be applied over that duration of whatever you're doing. So eccentric training is a big part. And that's another thing too with chronic aching injuries. Eccentric training is a big thing to do with a lot of people. It's been around for a while and people swear by it. And there are some new ways and new research out there that could contradict that. But most of the time, everyone may have an aching injury in the shoulder or the knee, they'd go eccentric exercises, which is just, you know, all it is fighting the lowering of that muscle, or elongating that muscle at a slower, you know, portion of it. Yeah, rotator cuffs are big things, especially with shoulders. If you can, it's called the Thrower's 10. Thrower's 10 is kind of like a hit all. And like I said, you can Google this stuff. It's not, you know, new stuff out. Thrower's 10 is what like a lot of throwers use, but it's also good exercises, basic exercises, just for your rotator cuff specifically, internal, external rotation, horizontal abduction, scaption, things like that. Obviously addressing the back musculature is big too, because if you're too strong in the front, then your back, or sorry, yeah, too strong in the front and you're not strong enough in your back, it throws things up, because moving your shoulders actually has a bone called your scapula that's involved, which is in your posterior chain. So you need to train that also. So you see a lot of guys forward shoulders leaning over at computer desks, things like that. I'm guilty of it myself. So you got to open up that chest and give you, you know, some more room with that back muscle pulling it out to balance you out.
Man, it's the simple stuff that helps so much. Like you were saying, those super light weights and just simple movements and focus on eccentrics. The thing I love about that stuff, and then how that obviously applies to stretching and foam rolling, the other things we'll cover, is you don't have to be in the gym to do that stuff. And it doesn't have to be like your workout. It's something you can do at the end of the day while your wife has some stupid show on TV and you're hanging out. You know what I mean? It's just like...
It's so true, man. So true.
Yeah, right? Like when I'm not healthy and working on something like this for recovery or whatever, that's typically what I'll do, is it's not part of my workout. It's just like at night, you know, to work on those things specifically when it's otherwise dead time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and like I said, it's funny because athletes always used to laugh at me because I always had like my lower portion is like what gets me. My like lower body always gets tight. It's groin, hips. So they always see me randomly. Like I'll be like, it might be like a 5 second, 10 second hold in a squat. I'll always be down in my squat for some reason. And it's because I'm stretching. I'm bouncing back and forth, getting my mobility. And they just laugh. They're like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, hey, not all of us train like athletes and have the time of day, you know, to, you know, go through and have their workout designed for them. You got to fit it in where you can fit it in. So that's kind of what I do. And you, yeah, like you said, if you're chilling at home and you can do these things, you know, heck, a milk jug and, you know, a Yeti filled with water at 2 pounds, just trying to see how long you can hold it out in front of you, things like that, you know, can make a difference. It's like I said, it's better to have a little than nothing at all.
Yeah. So what about, we hit kind of low back and midline, hit shoulders. What about guys who struggle with like lower body joint issues, whether that's knee, ankle, or have trouble hiking with weights? Again, we're not diagnosing anything, or if somebody's recovering from a tear, we're not covering that. But just in general, what are some of the things to begin to look at there?
Actually, a lot of people don't believe it or not, but a lot of people are immobile in their ankles. And it kind of is a big thing, because if you're not immobile, or if you're immobile in your ankles, it throws off everything up. Your squat will be off. A lot of things will be off like that. You can't hit depth in your squat, things like that. So a lot of ankle mobility is pretty big. That's pretty simple stuff, ankle exercises or just ankle stretching. A simple one is like putting your toe against the wall and backing it up, you know, a few inches, and then try and see if you can take your knee to the wall. You'll feel something that you probably have never felt before. But the rule of thumb is, I always tell one to make like a thumbs up, take that thumbs up, put the thumb against the wall flat, and then put your toes against the end of your back of your hand, and then try to do that knee to wall while keeping your heel flat on the ground. It is going to give you a stretch that most people would probably have never felt. And so that's going to loosen up your ankles right there. That's an ankle mobility exercise right there. And that's how simple it is. And obviously if you can't get it, then you just move your foot in a little bit and give it a few more shots, you know, and keep working on that. But it'll stretch your Achilles, open up that front, portion, anterior portion of your ankle box, your mortise, things like that. And then obviously if you figure that and address that out, now you can go up the chain. And if you have, you know, knee problems, things like that, like I said before, eccentric exercises are big. But that proprioception drills that I talked about, like standing single leg, things like that, those are going to give strength in your knee. But not only strength, I shouldn't say strength, because obviously you got to have some weight on there to gain strength and hypertrophy. It's more proprioception. It lets your body know where it is. So if it's in a funky spot, you're not likely to hurt yourself. Body awareness is pretty much a better term for it. If your body is aware of you're in a compromising position, then ideally you're more likely to get out of that position without being hurt if you have proprioception. So you step on a rock, right, and your ankle turns in. So
a lot of times guys get ankle sprains that way. They have low boots or things like that. But if you did some ankle training, single leg balance, Bosu ball balance, that's going to help you not have that problem, because you'll be able to bounce back and be like, oh, hey, my ankle's in a bad spot. My body's going to tell me to move it back, because your body is going to know before you know in your mind that you were in a bad spot, you know. So then when it comes to the knee, you can do a lot of specific knee exercise. Eccentric training is big for it. You can, like I said, orthotics are big. You can use those too. Good boots. Proper footwear is definitely a big thing. Ideally, when you're training and using anything in the field, having what works for you. That's why it's so specific. I'm trying to think of certain knee things that pop up. Can you think of anything specific that you'd like to address with it?
No, it's just something I hear from folks, you know. Oh, I'm having trouble hiking because knee issues. So I just didn't know from a high level or just, you know, super broad general level, what are some of the things to begin to look at?
Yeah, ideally ankle would be the first thing I would look at, because usually it's off the lower part. Second thing, it would be knee strength and proprioception. Those, switching up those exercises in different areas, single leg exercises like single leg RDLs, balance, ties in, you know, ankle, foot, ankle, knee, all the way up to the hip. So you're kind of hitting it all in one with like a single leg RDL if you can balance, things like that.
Can you explain what that is for people that don't know?
Yeah, so a single leg RDL is a single leg Russian deadlift is what it stands for. So really, ideally, a single leg RDL is, if imagine you had a cone put out in front of you, probably about, let's say a foot, maybe 6 inches, somewhere in there. And all I'm going to do is I'm going to have my knee slightly flexed, and then I'm going to bend over either same hand or opposite hand at the hip, slightly bend at the knee, and just kind of touch that cone and bring yourself straight back up. And you can look up the form and everything on Google. That's kind of just a quick overline of it. Probably didn't give all the cues there for it. But those little things like that are an all-in-one drill where it's doing one proprioception for your ankle, knee, all the way up to the hip, and helps you keep you balanced hip-wise a lot. And your core is involved with it. So that's just a simple thing. Another thing is a lot of people use, it's called total knee extension. TKE is short. You can find that on Google too. Like I said, all this stuff's not anything new. Those are pretty big with guys with knee pain. So all it is just an extension of a knee. So you wrap a band around your knee tied to a wall, and you're facing the wall, and you just go from slightly flexed knee to extend knee. Or if you say you had a leg curl machine, right, and you put it up to a moderate weight, all I would do is I would lift that leg extension machine up with both legs. And then I would take one leg away and hold it there as long as I could and slowly let it down. So that's that eccentric training I was talking about. So you can do that with your effective knee if you're having knee problems. That seems to work really well. The problem is some guys, what they do is you got to at some point bring that leg lift up with both legs, so that way you're not doing work on that affected leg also. That's kind of where eccentric training can kind of be a devil, because it takes twice as long. That's the bad part about it, but it does work. Simple. Actually, another one, simple one is, have you ever seen a wedge board in a gym before? You ever heard of a wedge board?
No, I mean, I can envision what I think that is, but I honestly don't know.
Yeah, so a wedge board is something easily you can do or make at your house. And all it is if it was like you were thinking of a wedge to put both your feet on and put it flat against a wall. So obviously you now have an angle, whether that be, there's no specific angle, 30, 40, 45, whatever it may be. All I would do is I would step on that wedge, so it's facing the wall, slanted down towards the ground in front of you. I'd step on that with my feet angled down, and I would do squats on it. No weight or anything, because like I said, we don't want to go too crazy into it where we're now applying too much force and bad mechanics, because you're flirting the line there. But if you're having knee pain, especially anterior knee pain, that's kind of a big one to go to, is that wedge board squat where your feet are slanted down, your heels are elevated, and just doing a simple squat with body weight.
Get into recovery a bit. We've kind of mentioned in passing things like the lacrosse ball, you know, foam rolling. I know there's some other things we can do in terms of like hot cold exposure, massage, compression, etc. Some of that we can do in the field. It's funny, like when we did our death hike, I packed a little ball to roll on, like a lacrosse ball. We would take our trekking poles and basically use them as a roller to like roll out quads and stuff like that. So whether it's in the field or whether it's at home, let's just begin kind of that discussion on really recovering smart after we do train hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And you actually just hit two of the main field ones right there. And, you know, a ball and a, you know, a trekking pole were kind of big. Those are ideally what I would use too. So ideally, most people don't understand what foam rolling or any kind of that soft tissue stuff is. So when we talk about soft tissue, ideally, when we think of that, it's called fascia. So fascia, if no one's familiar with fascia, is kind of like a bundle of tissue that surrounds our muscle. So if you ever look at, like, well, for instance, when you're processing a game, right, and you know the silverback of, you know, whether it be a tenderloin or whatever you're cutting out of, you know, when you're processing, right, the little thin, you know, fascia is what silverback is, or the little lining around the muscle. Well, our bodies are just like that. All of our muscles are surrounded in fascia. So what soft tissue is doing is smoothing that fascia out, because that's where you get knots and it gets bundled up. It can cause muscles not to function properly. So that's what you're doing with all this soft tissue work, is you're just smoothing down that fascia. And like I said, it connects your whole body. So it can run from your bottom of your feet all the way to your head, to your neck, everything X, Y, and Z. So that's what you're doing with all that tire, you know, rolling the lacrosse ball, trekking pole, lacrosse balls, tennis balls, foam rollers, all that stuff is what ideally what you're looking for. And then you can go into, like, you know, passive massages, which is like if you go to Walmart and you see, like, or Brookstone, you know, you go to Brookstone and you see those massage chairs. Everyone tries and gives them a run. Ideally, that's what they're doing, is trying to soften those tissues so you're not so tense and the fascia goes down, which are great, by the way. I love going to Brookstone and messing around and sitting in those for like a half hour, killing time while the other one's shopping. But yeah, so that's kind of like a basic of like what soft tissue is. There's some more advanced stuff that you can go, like assisted tool stuff like Graston and Galveston. Those are underneath the sun. Most of those are used in my field, but you can always purchase those. I used to use the back of just regular scissors, so the handle part, right? And just putting a little lotion on and just scraping it against your forearm or wherever it may be you can reach to break up those fascias. And you'll get little red bumps, and that's, you know, called pica, which is just little cells breaking up and adhesions breaking up. So you're bringing blood flow to that area, ideally. And that's what soft tissue is. You're bringing blood flow to the area to help smooth out and replenish those muscles with whatever damage, micro damage, we should say, that's causing those problems. So that's definitely the biggest, probably, home and just general public thing that you can use is the foam rollers, tiger sticks. They're just rolling sticks, things like that. And then, like I said, you go into hot and cold therapies, you know, ice packs, heat packs, cold baths, hot baths, contrast, which is hot to cold. All those things are, you can do at your own house. And there's no given rule that say, hey, you know, a cold bath's going to work for you, or hey, a hot bath's going to work for you. You have to find what works for you. Ideally, we always tell athletes to live in the cold, because it seems there's a pretty good correlation that after doing workouts and things like that, ice baths are a good recovery tool for everybody. Another thing too that people might have access to at their gyms are like saunas and steam rooms. Those are a big popular thing nowadays too, to use. One, to, you know, obviously sweat and, you know, get toxins, anything you want to think about like that, and be more efficient sweater. I actually do them a lot when I used to train with the boxers. And I always felt great after doing them. Plus, it raises your body heat, things like that. And if you're a sinus guy, if you go into a steam room for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, it's like your sinuses are cleared for the whole day. So that's kind of going over just some of the little things. Anything you want me to hit on specifically?
No, that's good. What about compression gear, both during activity as well as after activity? What's the validity there? What have you seen from your experience and how effective that might be for folks?
Yeah, so that's hit and miss with a lot of people. There's a lot of research out there that's trying to say, you know, it does work. And then there's obviously the research that says it doesn't work. So if it does work for you, I say go for it. I like it. I actually wanted athletes to get compression garments for, say, if you're, for the big part is most punters, if they're going Western, they might be coming from the East Coast. So they might be flying out or sitting in a car or whatever. So obviously gravity is going to pull all our fluids down to our feet. So yeah, compression garments during travel are a big part, I think, to help you recover. That's something that's simple as, you know, wearing a pair of socks that are pretty tight on an airplane, because obviously people have swollen feet. You hear about that. Removing your shoes when you fly, things like that will help with that kind of stuff. And I think makes a big difference. Now, when it comes to if it does work for you, it does. The only way to find that out is if you try it. Some people like it. Some people don't. I'm a fan of it. There are some devices out there called pneumatic ones, which if you can afford these are a pretty cool tool. They're called Normatex or RP Sport makes them. They're recovery pumps. And all they are like these sleeves that fit over your legs or your arms. And they just pump air in at certain pressures in compartments all the way up to your upper torso. Because like I said, gravity pulls everything down. So we want to get blood flow and circulation back up from the lower limb. Because ideally, when you're walking around, your circulation is out in your lower limbs is recirculated by walking. A lot of it comes from walking and not just your heart beating and pushing blood down there. A lot of it is moving your ankles up and down, getting that muscle pump so fluids can move in and out to replenish, you know, the old and bring in the new. So compression garments, I think, are definitely a tool that you can use to help you out. And so like I said, that's kind of hit and miss. You know, some people are out there with it, some people aren't. I'm kind of for it. I think it works just from my personal use and hearing other athletes. I mean, you always see, baseball players, for instance, always wear them on their arms and sleeves, whether it be cold or not cold. They usually always have a compression garment on their throwing arm, and they like it a lot. So I think you have to take what works for you in that one. Can I say it works for 100% sure? I wish I could, but nothing's 100% in my world. There's the ones that work for people and the ones that don't.
This is a off topic of hunting for sure, but applies to pretty much most people in general, as I'm sure a good portion of our audience. And you mentioned it in passing before, but just people that spend a lot of desk time or shoot even these days, unfortunately, like phone time, hunched over, not great posture. What are some specific things just in general, like maybe corrective exercises or stretches that those folks can do?
So say you're sitting at your desk. This is another thing I get caught up in doing is I'll notice myself hunching over and then I'll make myself straighten up and then just flex my abs, trying to think about tilting my hips back, driving my feet in the floor, and just start doing like 10-second holds of where my back's not in my chair, not supported, and then trying to, you know, squeeze my glutes, squeeze my abs, core and tight, just staying in a static position where you try to think you're not going to move. You're a statue, right? So little things like that can, you know, tie into your day at your desk. Obviously, people love the physio balls that, you know, actually research is out there and physio balls at your desk to sit on, you know, to roll around on and things like that. Can also, you know, they work if you do it right. You have to keep upright and things like that. So just paying attention is the biggest part when it comes to being at a desk or on a phone. Pulling those shoulders back, keeping that core tight, little things like that can make a difference. Corrective wise, you know, you're probably going to hit those only if you're going to the gym and X, Y, and Z, because that's all core. Like I said, core is a big part. That's why I always tell people the first thing, anything to do with low back or shoulders, things like that can all tie into core at some point somehow. Obviously the biggest part, instead of doing lacrosse balls, I didn't really talk about the front of your side or the interior side of you, but a lot of people that rolled forward shoulder kind of look, they usually have tight pec minors is what it's called. And it's just a, you know, a chest muscle that lies under your pec major. And all I would do is take a lacrosse ball, get against a wall or a floor and roll that guy out. Cause that's the thing that comes the most tight on most people, just from being in that, kyphotic position, shoulders forward, neck forward, extend out. That's starting point.
Cool. Yeah, no, good. We've talked so much and mentioned about core, and I hope we've clarified that it's not just like ab exercises, it's not crunches. When we talk about core, we're not talking about six pack type thing. But just to recap, because I think it's so important, and I think it's so overlooked, even just for hiking, again, hiking with a load, how that trunk is just so important. Give us like your top, whatever, 3, 4, 5 movements for core strengthening, whether it's, you mentioned like there's different categories of rotational, anti-rotational, etc. What are just like your hit list of things to try?
So starting out, just basic, super basic, and I use these most of my every day, just because people don't really do them, would be things called a dead bug, a bird dog, a plank, side planks, and then it's called a pull-off, P-A-L-L-O-F, pull-off press or pull-off hold. Those are like the main five that are pretty basic and that everyone can do and look up and see how to do them. Those kind of hit all. And then obviously you want to tie in some of the glute work too. So a hip bridge or a tabletop on a physio ball. Like those are the main exercises. If I was going to start and give just general advice to people, that's where I would hit. And those are usually the ones that you advance anyways into a more elite level that even elite athletes start out doing when they have back issues or core issues. Because you have to tie in one, your front of your core, the back, the sides, and your glutes are a big part of it. Hip musculature is a big part. So those are the ones I'd go with. And if anyone needs, you know, explanations of those, like I said, those are simple. You can YouTube them, Google them, X, Y, and Z. If not, reach out to me. I'll definitely show, you know, what a simple exercise could be.
Awesome. Cool. Anything else that we kind of didn't hit that you think might be helpful?
No, I think everything's pretty good. Like I said, there's a million recovery tools. You just got to go out there and see what works for you. Hot, cold, compression, you know, ointments are a big thing too. You know, Icy Hot, BioFreeze, those can work for people too. Also, I'm a fan of BioFreeze for myself personally. All those things work if, you know, they don't work down to like a deep level of tissue, but they work superficially. So it definitely helps. At least your mind helps. Anti-inflammatories, that's a big part. You know, your ibuprofens, things like that are definitely something you can use. Whether that fits into your recommendations from doctors, X, Y, and Z, make sure everything's covered if you can do those things. I think that's pretty much it, though. I think we've hit a good majority of everything that's just pretty much basic coverage for every day, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. It's one of those things, again, where if we want to do this a long time, we got to take care of ourselves. And I know for me personally, this stuff gets overlooked. It's not the sexy stuff. It's not the stuff that you want to be doing, like lifting big or running hard or doing a crazy hike. It's none of that, but I think it's really important in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say it's the little things. And like I said, bringing back that quote again, your body's a bank. You're taking money out every day. You got to put that money back in.
Well, once again, thank you guys for tuning in. As I mentioned on the Monday Minute this week, if you caught that, I'm not sure what next week looks like for the publishing schedule because we're traveling and hitting shows. The Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show and then the Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City. And so we'll do our best to get something out there. But if by chance we miss next week, be sure to tune back in because we have some great stuff in store for sure.